Welcome back. I'm Hanat Bhabha, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. This is not extreme. It's a girl thing. What we all would be if the big door inside us flew open. Don't tell me not to cry, to calm it down, not to be so extreme, to be reasonable. I am an emotional creature. Those are some of the words excerpted from Emotional Creature, a new play by Eve Ensler, opening tonight at the Berkeley Repertory Theater. Eve Ensler, the Tony Award-winning playwright, performer, activist, and author of The Vagina Monologues, is with us today on Your Call to talk about her new work. Emotional Creature is based on Ensler's book by the same title. The performance is a collection of monologues and songs in celebration of girlhood in a society that often devalues the talents and emotions of girls and women. So do you allow yourself to be emotional in your life? What does that mean? What's your story of girlhood? And how can making space for the voices and stories of girls improve society overall? Eve Ensler is best known for The Vagina Monologues, which has been translated into 48 languages and performed in over 140 countries. Her experience performing that show inspired her to create V-Day, a global movement to stop violence against women and girls. Her other work includes plays such as The Good Body and Here, the memoir Insecure at Last, and the novel I Am an Emotional Creature, The Secret Life of Girls Around the World, which became a New York Times best seller back in 2010. Eve joins us from the studios of KPFA in Berkeley. Welcome to Your Call, Eve.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And to our audience, we also want to take your calls. Do you consider yourself an emotional creature? Do you allow yourself to be emotional in your life? Is it taboo where you're from? What do you do about that? What's your story of girlhood? If you're a girl, if you've been a girl, if you're a parent to one, if you work with, spend time with girls, what would you like to share about that experience? And how do you think the world might be different if we saw emotions and intuition as strengths rather than weaknesses? Would we have more women leaders, for example? You can call us with your views and experiences at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Or better yet, you can leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org, and we'll try to get it on the air. So, Eve Ensler, your play is opening tonight at the Berkeley Repertory Theater. Congratulations.
Thank you. We have our first preview tonight. It opens on the 22nd.
I see. Okay. Well, it's called Emotional Creature, and it's based on your book by the same title. Much like The Vagina Monologues, for which you've gained international notoriety, this book is a collection of monologues in the voices of girls. You say each monologue is a literary text inspired by traveling the world, by witnessing events, by listening to real and imagined conversations. On occasion, a monologue was inspired by an article, an experience, a memory, a dream, a wish, an image, or a moment of grief or rage. So why don't you talk about your process of gathering these stories? You went all around the world. What was that process like?
Well, for the last almost 15 years, I've been traveling the world with V-Day and with The Vagina Monologues to help support women anywhere I can to end violence against women and girls and to bring about equality and justice and safety so that women can thrive and rather than barely survive. And I think over the course of these years, I've just been paying attention to girls and witnessing girls and listening to girls and watching girls. And it's incredible the circumstances that girls are struggling with in the world right now. And, you know, there are so many obstacles and there's so many things in the world encroaching on them and so many pressures. And for a long time, I really wanted to write something for girls that girls could perform that would be theirs. But I didn't really have the link, the thing that would bring girls together around the world in a piece. And then it slowly began to dawn on me that in fact there was a kind of consolidating principle, which was that everywhere I went in the world, it seemed to me there was this global mandate to please. And it took various forms, whether it was pleasing fashion setters and starving oneself, or whether it was pleasing traditional leaders and having your clitoris cut, or whether it was pleasing, boys and going faster than you were ready to go, or pleasing popular girls and being mean to your best friends, being pleasing parents and overachieving or finding yourself moving in life direction you didn't want to move in. It just seemed everywhere I went, girls were pleasing someone or something other than themselves. Mm-hmm. And so once I kind of got that as this overriding principle, then I began to see a way that I could link the piece and tell stories that could be kind of organized around a basic principle.
Well, you say in your intro that when you were growing up, you didn't know how to live as an emotional creature, and you say you felt like an alien. What does that mean, you didn't know how to live as an emotional creature? First of all, what's an emotional creature?
Well, I, from the time I was born, I was being told that I was too much, you know, too dramatic, too intense, too caring, too passionate. You know, I remember being called Sarah Bernhardt, and I didn't even know who she was, but I knew I wanted to be her. And, you know, it was always this feeling that what I felt about the world and how the world came into me was what I was overreacting, you know? And I think it's taken me many years to understand that, in fact, I wasn't overreacting. I wasn't even reacting enough. what I saw and the injustice I felt and the outrage I felt and the sorrow I felt and the desire I had to try to make the world right in some way was actually legitimate. And I think we do this to girls and we do it to boys. We do it to everyone. We wipe out that essential part of us, which instinctively and organically knows something's wrong, that has passion about it, that's devoted to changing it, that has a vision of a different way and actually has the kind of wherewithal to begin to follow another way. And I think the eradication of that girl voice, that girl cell, that girl in us is the eradication of our revolutionary spirit.
It sounds like suppression.
Yeah, I think we would call it suppression. I think most of us are told we're too emotional or we're too intense or we're too whatever.
Calm down.
You're overreacting. You're feeling too much. It isn't that big a deal. Actually, it is that big a deal.
Well, we're full of data and information and news about how the world is falling apart, but there seems to be no room in the public sphere for emotions that come up around that. There's certainly not enough time in the little news clips we hear around the media, and there seems to be no time for intuition either to be a part of that. Why do you think our society is so afraid of these emotions, of the emotions coming from girls?
Well, I think it's really interesting what you said about data. I think we have all the information we need. For example, if you look at global warming, everything's very clear. Without emotion connecting to data, without heart connecting to facts, there is no action, really. So you can have all the data you want, but we'll still be marching to our end. And I think the reason we're so terrified of feeling is because feeling brings about change. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at Tahrir Square, there was a lot of feeling in Tahrir Square. People came with their outrage and with their desire and with their hunger for another world and to end oppression and to end a tyranny. And that emotion led to something. And I think we suppress emotion. We suppress emotion in boys. We suppress it in girls. We suppress it in everyone. And I only know my own life experience has taught me that it's been my emotions connected with data or connected with information or connected with thought that has brought me to be able to do things that can bring about change.
And characteristics crying, you know, or like being emotional. Why do you think that's considered weakness? And like, why are women called hysterical if they display emotions like sadness or confusion, or called a B word? I don't like the word. If they display anger or rebellion, you know, it's African American women are stereotyped as loud and, you know, calm down and be quiet. And why is crying considered weakness? Why do you think?
Well, I have a lot of different theories about it. I think that what crying does often is connect you with other people. Usually when you're weeping about something or crying about something, it's because you've opened your heart and you're feeling compassion. And I think compassion is absolutely considered a weakness. And if you look at military training, for example, what are you trained? How are you trained? You're trained to absolutely not feel what the, quote, enemy is feeling, right? Otherwise, mm-hmm. you wouldn't be able to shoot them and kill them. And so much of, I think, patriarchal training is military modeled. You know, boys are brought up on a military model, which is a patriarchal model. I think if we are open-hearted and if we feel other people's pain and if we cry and if we make ourselves vulnerable, then we actually have to change what we're doing in our life. If you walk past people on the street who are hungry or who are mentally ill or who are in need, and you actually were open to them and you actually felt what they were feeling, you would be forced to stop what you were doing and actually take them into your being, and they would change your day and you would have to do something else. And I think that's true with everything. And I think we teach boys, for example, not to cry from the minute they open their mouths so that they don't get, quote, lost, do you know, so they stay on track.
Right.
So they, you know, get to the top so they can get there without being distracted by, you know, a human being in their way. But in fact, I often say that I think, you know, bullets are hardened tears, that after you stop crying for a period of years, where does your sorrow go? Where does your grief go? Where does all that go?
Where should it go? Because there's so much sadness and anger and, you know, in the world. We were just hearing the BBC News, you know, hardly a day goes by without some extremely sad story that we hear on the news, either here or worldwide. You know, if we were emotional about everything, where would we be and what do we do with those emotions?
Well, I think there's a myth around emotions that if you have your feelings, then all you'll do is have feelings for the rest of your life, you know? You know, that if you start crying, you'll never stop, or if you feel your grief, you'll just live in a grief pool, you know? And I think actually the opposite is true, that when you have your feelings, they actually, you pass through them and you get to the next place. When you resist your feelings, you actually are kind of prisoner to them, even if you're not having them. And I think if you have your feelings, you know, I met a man 6 years ago, an extraordinary doctor named Dr. Mukwege, and I interviewed him, and he was from the Congo, and he's an absolutely marvelous human being, and he's devoted his life to serving women in the Congo. He's an OBGYN who are being raped and ripped apart by the militias there in a war that's being fought for the minerals in the Congo. Now, I sat with that man on stage and I interviewed him, and I was devastated by what he was saying. Devastated. I couldn't believe the stories he was telling about what was happening to women in the Congo. Had I not felt what he was feeling, I would have walked away from that interview and said, well, that was interesting. That was an interesting interview. Look at that data. Over 500,000 women are raped in the Congo. 6 million people died there. But because I actually cried during that interview and felt him during that interview and he entered me, it compelled me to go to the Congo, and it compelled me to organize and begin to devote my life to seeing how I could serve and be of help and assistance or anything I could be to the women of the Congo. Had I not had that feeling reaction to him, I never would have done that. And I think we have to, I think this rap that feelings have gotten, that somehow they're going to lead us astray. We're already astray. We've gone astray.
Okay.
We're out there now. I think it's our feelings that will bring us back to each other and to a compassionate modality where we operate, understanding that we're all interconnected.
Speaking with Eve Ensler, author, playwright, activist, champion of girl power. How about that one? Put that on your business card.
I'm for that.
I'm Hannah Baba, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. And we'd like to invite our audience to call in. The number is 866-798-TALK. That's 798-8255. Or you can post a comment on KALW.org or send us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And we will go ahead and take a caller. We're going to go to Santa Cruz and talk to Jamie. Hi, Jamie. Is Jamie there? Jamie's gone. Okay, call back, Jamie. So let's go ahead and talk about this performance. how did you formulate kind of what you would put into Emotional Creature? You're so known for the vagina monologues. Did you seek to differentiate this from that consciously, or how did you set about it?
You know, I try not to think about the piece that comes before because that gets too complicated, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think every piece, based on the themes and based on the experiences and the information and what it is, begins to establish its own form. And I think with Emotional Creature, because it's of the girl, it's girl world, you know, there's a particular way I think that girls communicate. And it's quite amazing because I think they live on a lot of different levels of consciousness simultaneously. And, you know, we always joke about the fact that they can be talking about their blue nail polish in one breath and the dying of polar bears in the next. And I'm really interested in how we move through all those landscapes simultaneously. And so the piece really has been emerging. We began it in South Africa, in Johannesburg, last year and last summer. And I really wanted to start the piece in Africa because the piece is so much about the heart, and I think Africa is the heart of the world. And we started it with a group of amazing six girls in South Africa. And Africa really informed what the piece wanted to be. When we were there, we met an amazing composer named Charles Johan Lingerfelder, and he we thought we were going to just begin with incidental music, and then we just started creating songs together because it was so clear that the girl world demanded songs, and music was such a part of it, and dance was such a part of it. And I think, you know, then we went to Paris, and Paris brought in this whole other energy of kind of melancholy and sorrow and longing. So that got integrated in. And I think, you know, this piece has, you know, really revealed to me anyway what it's wanted to be, and revealed to the director Joe Bonney structurally. So we've had a just tremendously collaborative and really wonderful process of developing the piece.
Jamie from Santa Cruz isn't with us, but he sent us a question. So I'm going to ask you that question, which is, he says he's a therapist and he wonders why girls are taught to avoid conflict and avoid anger. Why do you think?
Well, I think that's a very good question. And it goes back to pleasing, doesn't it? I think that if you're brought up to please, then you never have conflict with anybody, and you never get angry at anybody, because then you wouldn't be pleasing them. And I think one of the things I really have been watching in developing this piece, because, you know, the piece looks at girls on the continuum of pleasing, people who are pleasing, resisting pleasing, over-pleasing, you know, etc. When you get to resisting pleasing and actually finding out what you want, what your own voice is, you inevitably come to conflict. It's impossible to avoid. Because if someone wants you to do something that you don't want to do and you stop doing it, you have conflict. And I think that is the point where we really need to support girls and encourage girls and give girls, you know, have girls' backs. Because we have to, I really feel that if you can overcome two or three times doing what somebody wants you to do, and you begin to have the success and the feeling of that, then you begin to stretch that muscle and develop that muscle so you can do it more and more.
Well, Jamie from Santa Cruz has called back, so let's bring him on. Hi, Jamie. Glad to have you on the show.
Thank you. And I wanted to applaud Eve for much of what she's bringing out, which is really, really important. And I think culturally we have, with all due respect to feminism, still a long way to go in terms of relations between the genders and aspects of what happens to girls and on into their womanhood. One of the things that concerns me is that this tendency to avoid conflict, which seems to be very strongly learned. I think I grew up in a family, but I noticed that my sister didn't involve herself in much of the conflict, and it seemed to happen so from such an early age. She became the abandoned child, sort of. But what concerns me psychologically is that it seems like, and I know this goes back to Freud viewing women as hysterics, who were actually being abused, that in fact the women tend, there's some internal mechanism in people that turns that unexpressed rage into depression and even physiological distress. And I just wondered if Eve had anything to say about that, because it renders women much less able to function.
Okay, thank you, Jamie.
I couldn't agree with you more, Jamie. And I think, you know, one of the things I've really been thinking a lot about is what buried trauma, what buried anger, what buried conflict does to us, not only psychologically, but physically. I mean, how many diseases we're getting from that, how many cancers we're getting from that, how many heart diseases, how many things we're getting in our body, but particularly depression. And I think if I have any hope for this piece, it's that people leave the theater feeling that they have a right to share what's going on inside them, and they have a right to ask for what they need, and they have a right to speak out against injustice or places where they feel they're being violated and hurt. So many people I interviewed, for example, for the Vagina Monologues, who had been raped or incested or hurt, hadn't ever told anyone. And those stories lingered inside them and festered inside them. And they created malignancies, and they created bad energy, and they created depression, and they created illness. And I think that's all comes from, you know, girls being brought up in an environment where they don't feel that they are able or welcome or supported in talking about the truth of their lives. And hopefully this piece is, you see six girls on stage talking about their truth and the truth of girls around the world.
And speaking of the six girls on stage, two of them are joining us now by phone. And first we're going to meet...
Yay!
Yeah, right? First we're going to meet Emily Grossland. Hi, Emily.
Hi!
How are you? This is
your first show. How are you, Eve? How are you?
Morning, Emily.
So this is your first...
Good morning.
This is your first show with the Berkeley Rep. So what's your feeling about playing your role in this play?
I have to say it's absolutely an honor to be doing it, to be working with Eve, to be working with Joe, to be working with Berkeley Rep, and just to be part of such an amazing movement that Eve is starting. It's an incredible honor. I mean, as an actor, you go audition after audition after audition, and you hope for a job and you hope for a job. And what I ended up getting was more than a job. You know, I ended up getting something that's going to be, you know, part of my life forever.
How is this performance different from previous performances you've done?
Well, I feel like, as Eve has said to us many times, you know, it's not just a show, it's a movement. So there's an incredible, I don't want to use the word pressure because that sounds negative, but there's just an incredible responsibility that comes along with this show that is, you know, it's a little nerve-wracking, but it's also so rewarding to know that we're going to be able to affect change in the audience members and in the people that the audience members then go and touch themselves.
So you feel you have a mission there?
Yes, definitely, for sure, yeah.
All right, that's great. Eve, how did you recruit these young ladies?
Oh, they're just, first let me just say, they're just absolutely wonderful. And we did auditions in New York, and, you know, I have to say amazing girls auditioned. It was very hard to choose because there were so many diverse and varied and complex and intricate girls who auditioned. And these particular girls who got the parts were just, they were just so talented, but also so original in who they were individually and in their personalities. And it's a very diverse cast. There's African-American girls, there's mm-hmm. Chinese-American girls, there's Iranian-American girls, there's Caucasian-American girls.
Well, we have two of them on the line, and okay. We are going to keep them on the line as well as you, Eve, because we are coming up on a break. We're talking to Eve Ensler, Emily Grossland, and we're going to talk to Molly Carden, who's performing in the show. I'm Hana Baba, and this is Your Call. Stay tuned after the break.
You're tuned to KALW. As you may have heard, BART service has been shut down between Oakland and San Francisco as of early this morning due to a fire at the West Oakland station. BART is asking commuters to use alternate transportation like the ferry service or AC Transit Transbay bus. KALW News will be updating you as the story develops throughout the day. Just stay tuned to KALW at 91.7, or you can go to KALW.org. And for the latest regional transit information, you can go to 511.org.
I'm Hannah Baba, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and you're listening to Your Call. For those of you just joining us, we're podcasting our show, and you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up next. Friday, tomorrow, is the Media Roundtable. We are going to talk to journalists about the week's news. On Monday, what can we learn about the FBI from looking at its history? We'll have a conversation with Tim Weiner, author of Enemies, A History of the FBI, and Mike German, a former FBI agent who now works with the ACLU. On Tuesday, what did the economic stimulus accomplish? We'll speak with Michael Grabel, ProPublica reporter and author of Money Well Spent? But today we're talking about what's the secret life of girls around the world. We're having a conversation with Eve Ensler, creator of the Vagina Monologues, about her new play, Emotional Creature. That there's a preview tonight, but it opens on the 22nd. The play is a celebration of girlhood in a society that often devalues the talents and emotions of girls and women and shuts us up and shuts us down. So what does it take to empower young girls and how can we all benefit? You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Better yet, leave us a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And if you have a show idea for us, please also get in touch with us, feedback@yourcallradio.org. So before the break, we were talking to Emily Grossland about kind of her role in the play. And Emily, why don't we go a little bit into, if you can give us kind of a sneak peek into who you're playing, what you say, and what message you give out, without giving away too much, of course, so people can go on their own.
Well, one of the great things about this play is throughout a lot of it, we're really just playing ourselves, which is hugely fun, I have to say. And all of the girls in the cast, we've all become really good friends. So a lot of what you see on stage between us is real, and it's who we are. And I personally, in my life, identify as pan-gendered, which basically is I reject the gender binary system of male and female, and I sort of live androgynously, I guess is the most common term to use for it. So a lot of times when I'm cast in shows, I either play Peter Pan, and I'm or I play some sort of girly girl. So this is refreshing because I get to be
yourself. Yourself.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to Molly Carden, who's with you. If you can pass the phone to her, Molly. Hi. You're also making your Berkeley rep debut. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So tell me.
Hi.
Tell me what this means for you and what kind of role you will be playing and taking.
Yeah. I love what Eve always says about women being the greatest untapped resource and giving voice to a power that isn't given voice to by society and by the world that we live in, I think is what I feel very strongly about in terms of this play. So it is an honor to get to participate in that.
And do you, like Emily, incorporate yourself pretty much into your role?
Yeah. It's interesting because the sort of the pieces that I'm doing are coming a lot of the time from a place of of a lot of, well, one especially, but darkness and fear, and then sort of taking a journey to, and coming out of that, which I also get to do. So it's an interesting journey to get to take.
And do you feel that supports who you are? Is it true to you?
Yeah, I think fear is something that I work with a lot I struggle with in my own life, and to get to give voice to that, because it's something, I mean, that's the whole struggle, right? I mean, not mm-hmm. of being a woman and not being able to express yourself, I think.
Wonderful. I'm so glad we were able to get you guys on the show.
We
have a couple of callers. Let's go to them. We have from Berkeley, Dinah. Hi, Dinah.
Hi there. I have two comments on the topic of tears.
Tears.
When Dee was referencing tears mm-hmm. and her experience of what they mean. I know for myself in the past, especially when I was feeling less free to experience my anger would come out as tears. So I'd be crying when actually I was very angry. And the other comment on tears, and by the way, I'm very much looking forward to seeing the show. The other comment on tears is what I've learned about men, that apparently from early evolutionary caveman times, if you will, that for men, showing fear and tears occurred to them as a threat to survival. Like if they stopped to cry when they're being chased by a large wild animal, you know, that they could potentially get eaten. And so that's part of what I understand is the evolutionary trigger for men around when they don't respond well to women's tears. They either go into like fight, flight, or freeze, or, you know, they either want to fight a woman's tears, run away from them, or they just freeze, which is definitely my experience with a lot of men. So I just wanted to add that to the whole picture of, you know, the whole cultural male response to tears.
Okay, thank you for the call, Dinah. Eve, tears. So bottling up brings, you can't bottle up for long because they'll come out in the form of tears.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason I think crying is so brilliant is because it's just a big ocean, a big sea of feelings, and I think a lot of things comes out in the sea of tears. I think anger comes out. I think grief comes out. I think joy comes out. I think overwhelmingness comes out, you know, if that's a feeling. And I think, you know, I just going back to men, I think often we say that men are freaked out by seeing women's tears, but I think women are also freaked out when they see men cry. And, you know, I always tell this story about myself of when I was in Kosovo right after the war, and I was in a backyard of this family whose entire house had been destroyed, and there was just burnt out stuff in the backyard, and they were sleeping on the ground. And in the middle of us being there, the son returned who had been lost for 2 years, and the mother was there, and it was just this incredible emotional scene. And for some reason, when he saw me, the stranger in his yard, I think it allowed him to have all his feelings. And he just started wailing in my arms, this huge, big man. Oh. And I had two reactions in my brain. One was, oh, my God, there's a man wailing in my arms. And the other one was like, oh, please make him stop. And I really became aware at that moment that there was part of me that didn't like the idea of men having big feelings, that had been trained into me. And after that point, that was many years ago, I started to really look at that in myself to examine what part of me was afraid of men crying. What part of me was afraid to see men being lost and not knowing the way? What part of me was afraid to realize that we're all lost here together and nobody has any idea where we're going? And it's been a great process because now I really understand, you know, there's so many pressures on men not to cry. It's not just men. It's women. It's the world is saying, do not have your feelings.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So what do you think the world then would be like if we tipped the scales of gender balance kind of the other way and had more women than men in roles of power in world leadership, in the media, in academia, in the arts? Would they have, you know, the pressure to please? And would they be the emotional creatures? Do you think there would be a change there in what men are and what women are.
I do. I look, one of the experiences I've been having with Emotional Creature everywhere we've gone is how many boys have come up to me to say, je suis un créateur émotionnel. You know, this is me. I completely relate to this. And I think when we keep expanding the ground so that everybody gets to be their full self, like what Emily was talking about in a way, like being fully gendered, being on the whole continuum of gender, being allowed to be your full emotional self, of course the world will be a better place. It will be an entirely different place. And I think the question is, how do we all look in ourselves and see where we're not giving ourselves permission to be free and where we're not giving people around us permission to be free?
We have another caller, this time from Oakland. So let's talk to Sandina, and I think she wants to talk about V-Day. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Sandina, and I want to thank you for creating such a powerful movement out of the Vagina Monologues with V-Day. And I've been so impressed with, you know, how that's been taken all over the world and done such good work in Haiti and the Congo. And in this country, too, allowing women to talk about our private parts and reclaim them. I'm curious to know what you look forward to happening with your new play, I'm an Emotional Creature, which I'm looking forward to seeing. And
that's a great question.
That there's some action coming up in Berkeley to kind of launch a new project out of this play. Can you talk about that?
Yes, thank you for asking.
Thanks, Sandina, for the
and
call.
And thanks for your really kind words. Well, a couple of things. In terms of this play, the book has already begun something called V-Girls, which is a new movement of girls around the world. And you can go and be part of it on vgirls.org. Thousands of girls had already signed up, and boys, and lots of actions are already happening. Marches in South Africa, 400 book clubs.
So why don't you go back a little bit and even tell us about V-Day. What is it for those who don't know about it?
Oh, V-Day is a global movement to end violence against women and girls. We're going into our 15th year. It grew out of the Vagina Monologues, and it is basically a movement in 140 countries where people put on the play and other artistic pieces we've created around prison. There's a whole range of things that you can put on in your communities each year. And each one of those plays in your community raises money that you get to keep in the community, and it gets directed towards local groups which work to stop incest, rape, genital mutilation, violence of any form towards women. And over 15 years, I'm really proud to say that with the help of all of these extraordinary V-Day activists, we've raised $90 million. That's all been left, or pretty much most of it's been left in the communities to help end violence against women. And V-Girls is the next evolution in the movement of young women who are becoming self-empowered philanthropists and activists around the world. The action that Sandina was talking about, I'm very excited about, is something called 1 Billion Rising. And it will take place on V-Day next year, which is February 14th, 2013. When we started this movement 15 years ago, we wanted to go out of business. Our goal was to end violence and not be here forever. And we're still here. And that wasn't the plan. So we are going to escalate our efforts this year. We're going to do the biggest global action we've ever done. We're calling for the 1 billion women. That's a UN statistic, who have been raped and beaten on the planet, to walk out of their jobs, walk out of their schools, walk out of their offices, walk out with the men who love them, and to dance. It's going to be the biggest global action ever. And what's really thrilling is 142 countries have already signed up. We're seeing Aboriginal women organizing in Queensland, and women, we just got a tape yesterday from women in northern India. It's everywhere. And we hope that people will walk out and join us. Bring your posse, bring your music, dance wherever you can. And on the 24th, in the park, the one that's by Martin Luther King and Milvia, I forget the name of the park, the Civic Park, I think it is, there's an amazing action being organized. If you go to vday.org, you can find it, where there'll be ritual and drumming and singing and youth and everybody coming to really begin to really ignite the rising here in Berkeley. So please come and join us. Please go to vday.org and sign up. You can go right on right now and say who you're going to be dancing with, where you're going to be dancing, and mainly spread the news so we get thousands, millions, we get a billion people to rock this planet back into balance.
So Eve, when I hear you talk like that, it's engaging and it's empowering, and you're talking about 142 countries around the world. Now, in my mind, I'm thinking, getting, you know, asking young girls or women who were raped, who or were victims, to go out and dance with the men in their lives in the United States, you know, here in Berkeley, definitely it's something that can easily happen. But when you talk about women in the Congo, women in India, women in countries where kind of resisting to please can mean something fatal in their lives, kind of after they go out and do the dance and have that wonderful day, what then? And do they go back to their realities that they're living?
Well, first of all, I spend a lot of time in the Congo. So people dance all the time in the Congo,
okay.
And they dance everywhere, as they do in India, as they do everywhere in the world. But what I would say is that I think one of the things that happens with violence against women is it's so marginalized as an issue, even though it's affecting 1 billion women on the planet. And I think one of the things we need to do is make it clear how central this issue and how this is the mother of all issues. And I think when you get solidarity with that many people around the world, it makes it much harder to marginalize women and marginalize this issue. So I think there's a protection that begins to come from that. I also think women will know where to dance and where they can dance and where they feel safe dancing. And some people will dance indoors, some people will dance outdoors, some people, wherever women are comfortable, they will do that. But
right.
I promise you that if a billion women rise up on one day and begin to dance, everybody will not only be lifted in terms of their spiritual and political morale, but they will begin to see solidarity across borders, and they will begin to understand that the particular violence they're facing in their culture, in their climate, in their world, in their village is not particular to that village, but is actually particular to women across the world. And once you understand that, a solidarity begins to happen, which infuses you with strength that is undeniable. So I really trust that women know where they can dance, how they can dance, who they can dance with, because women are really smart. And I know that they will, I have a feeling there'll be people who don't stop dancing. And there'll be other people who dance and understand that they can dance more. And other people who will dance for the first time, and there'll be people who watch the dancing and the next time will dance.
Right.
And I think wherever people are on that continuum is the perfect place to be.
I guess part of that question for me also was kind of issues that girls have to deal with here versus in Afghanistan versus in the Congo can be very, very different, and their environments are very, very different as well. Let's talk about the Congo for a little bit. What kind of issues were the girls dealing with, and were they comparable to American girls and what they deal with?
Well, it's not a were, it's R.
R.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, having been traveling for many years now and spending time probably in the worst, in the rape mines of the world, and I've seen a lot of pretty horrible stuff. What's going on in Congo is without a doubt the worst thing I've seen anywhere, not only in terms of the numbers of women who are being raped and violated, but in terms of the way women are being raped and violated. And I think one of the grotesque things that's happening in the Congo is it's this kind of fusion of capitalism, colonialism, sexism, and all kind of merge, and racism merged in this cauldron, so that you see this war that's essentially being fought over the minerals, which, you know, Congo is one of the most fertile and resourceful countries in the world. And coltane and gold and copper are plenty. Coltane, which, by the way, goes into our cell phones and our PlayStations, which makes us all very much involved in this war. And what happens is that militias who are proxies for corporations end up going into villages and raping women, raping girls, having fathers rape their daughters, having sons rape their mothers, destroying the infrastructure of families and villages so that the families flee. And then once families have fled their villages, the militias take over the mines and mine those resources for the companies. And, you know, I have to say that when I first went to the Congo 6 years ago and I heard the stories and spent a lot of time there, I was pretty shattered. I just couldn't believe that we had come to this place where there was actual femicide going on, like the destruction of a female population in the name of minerals. But unfortunately, the war is still going on in the East, and the media has grown tired. Well, the media never did major reporting of it anyway, but the hit of media we got a few years ago has now stopped again, so that a lot of the massacres that are going on are invisible. On the other hand, I'm really proud to say that City of Joy, which is this amazing place that Vida opened with a local foundation called the Pansy Foundation, is this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place where at any given time, 90 women survivors of incredible atrocities and gender violence are there to be healed and trained and supported to become the next leaders of the Congo. And it is run by the Congolese. It's owned by the Congolese. It's directed by the Congolese. And our job over here is just to find them the resources to do what they know how to do. Mm-hmm. And we're having, you know, just looking at what's going on there, there's enormous success and enormous energy shift beginning to happen. And I think it's all of our hope that in 5 years, the City of Joy will have produced 1,000 leaders, which will be a small cadre of women who can take back the Congo and rise up and begin to direct it in a new direction.
We're going to go to an email from Ed now. He says, much of the emotions you're talking about that we negatively suppress are rooted in empathy, but much of the violence and wars in the world are steeped in emotions of hatred and selfish pride, which are emotions run amok, but without empathy. To say being emotional on its face is good is a little too simplistic if not tied to empathy. Much of what's wrong with humanity is a lack of empathy. Some emotions like hate could do with being suppressed. So empathy in relationship to, you know, being an emotional person. What do you think about that?
Well, I think I was talking about it all morning when I talked about compassion and being open and connected with other people.
Okay. So we're going to go to Gina in Oakland. Hi, Gina.
Hello. Eve, I want to thank you for all your good work.
Thank you.
And I just, you know, I don't want this to sound like a, oh, gee, poor me, but I feel that survivors right here in this country are being overlooked. Mm-hmm. And I was tortured, child prostitution, child pornography, mind control, brainwashing. There's a lot of undercover stuff that happens right here in this country. And what might have happened to me, the extreme of that was maybe unusual. But I know that other survivors, I've been in groups with them, and I've been healing from this stuff for 30 years. And it's not easy. You know, it's very deep and complex, mm-hmm. what they did to me. So I feel it's very easy to sort of go to the Congo and Central America for torture, the word torture. And there are people like myself who were tortured in this country. Women, girls. I was a baby when it started. And it continued for 28 years. And it's undercover. And people don't want to recognize this stuff in this country. It's easier for the left to go to torture in Central America than to listen to me and my story right here.
Thank you, Gina. Eve, going
Gina,
abroad versus problems at home.
Well, I don't think it's versus, and I just want to say, Gina, I think V-Day's been working. We're in every state in America, and we've been supporting women like you for the last 15 years here in America. We've never just been abroad. I was just specifically at this moment talking about Congo. I'm well aware that women are being tortured, and women are being abused, and women are being, you know, horribly raped and beaten and violated in America. As a matter of fact, I'm a survivor myself, and I grew up in America. So I certainly know. And I, you know, sometimes you can't focus on every single place every time you're talking. So I just want everyone here to know that we're well aware that of what's going on in America. And I'm very happy to say that there are many, 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 many V-Days in America that are supporting survivors. And I just also want to say something that she brought up, which is that One of the things that drives me crazy about people's willingness to understand the magnitude of issues of violence and torture and is that it's your life. It's your life. When someone rapes you, when someone tortures you, when it as she said, she's been recovering for her whole life. And I know that is definitely the case with me. You know, that if you are able and lucky to emerge from the sea of depression and self-hatred and self-annihilating rage that happens as a result of being abused, then you get to spend the rest of your life trying to eke your way out of it. And that's why I think I spend 12 hours of my day fighting to end violence against women so more girls aren't bought into it, so they don't have to spend their entire lives surviving rather than thriving. I mean, just imagine if girls were bought up and they were free and safe and they knew the world was theirs. Imagine the resource and the imagination and the potential we would be releasing rather than one out of three women on this planet being violated and undone. And when you think about one out of three, that's what happens to specific women. But as a woman, you know that it is possible to be raped, to be tortured, to be undone all the time. So that's impacting how you live your life anyway. It's a form of prison. So I'm very happy she called in, and I just want her to know that we're in complete solidarity with her.
Thank you, Gina, for your call. Eve, a final thought about what your show, Emotional Creature, can do for the girls and women who are healing, like Gina.
Well, I hope, you know, the other night I was just sitting in the audience, you know, in the dark as we were in you know, tech, and I was just looking at those six amazing girls up on the stage, and I was thinking, when have we seen six girls occupy a stage and take up space and be that important? And I think what I hope happens is that people will come, obviously, and see their own stories reflected and their own feelings reflected and their lives reflected. But more importantly, I just really hope people leave the theater knowing they have a right to their grief, they have a right to their anger, they have a right to their desires, they have a right to their voice, they have a right to say they don't want to do something when they don't want to do something, and they do want to do something when they do want to do it, and that we unite. We unite.
All right. Perfect way to end the show. Thank you so much. We've been speaking to Eve Ensler and earlier on Emily Grossland and Molly Carden. And thank you very much for being with us, Eve. Thank you
very much.
And thank you for joining us and for your calls and emails. I'm Hannah Baba sitting in for Rose Aguilar. Here's what's coming up tomorrow on the show. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of Spain's decision to borrow $125 billion to rescue its troubled banks. We'll also talk about J.P. Morgan, Jamie Dimon's Senate testimony, and the voter suppression controversy in Florida. We'll be joined by McClatchy's Kevin Hall, the Tampa Bay Times' Steve Busquet, and Martin Delfin of the leading Spanish daily El País. Where did you see the best reporting this week? Join us live at 10. It's Your Call with Matt Martin and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Mysick is our web editor. And Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Alan Farley is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in San Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.